Jim's bag of bollocks was our last best hope for peace. It failed. So what's happening?
Oh, the TARDIS has detected a painfully obscured chunk in the time stream. Steady on, old girl.
But what can we do, Doctor?
Gonna have to force an emergency landing. Hold on tight.
Where are we, Doctor? When are we? December 23rd, 2007. Oh, I love Christmas and humans and Earth and humans. Oh, give us a hug.
Ho, ho, ho. Since the dawn of recorded history, mankind has been obsessed with his baubles.
Or not. This was intended to be a spectacular extended episode of Alias season finale proportions, an attempt to end the show's first year with a bang. Unfortunately, that plan has been shot to shit.
It probably hasn't escaped your attention that neither of the two voices you're hearing sound like Jim. That's because he's been cruelly struck down by a throat-molesting, airborne virus that clearly does not appreciate one of the internet's finest talents.
Due to this monstrous and unspeakable tragedy, his friends have had to step in for microphone duty. My co-presenter is Richie, a film student who secretly enjoys touching the backs of dead people's hands at funerals. He also has a reputation for being rubbish at video games with more than two dimensions.
And mine is Owen, science buff and Geordie extraordinaire, who enjoys nothing in particular and spends most of his free time being bitter and cynical.
Do you know who I really can't stand, Richard?
Who would that be, dearest Owen?
That would be the prick. The angry ginger cunt will also be contributing his voice later on.
And one last thing before we continue. Much of the script was written before we knew Jim wouldn't be able to read it. For this reason, it's best to think of this arrangement as Jim himself speaking with someone else's voice.
Yeah, essentially he's rented our throats for the day. He can make us say anything he wants. Like, I'm a big knob.
I wipe my bottom with my bare hand.
I think Jim is the bestest guy in the world ever, and I aspire to be like him.
I like to squirt conditioner on my face, then look in the mirror and pretend I've been came on.
To add to the confusion, technical difficulties and general embuggerances have delayed this episode by about a week, giving my throat time to heal, well, sort of, and making some of the content ever so slightly out of date. So I will be popping in to drop the odd piece of commentary here and there, but essentially this is the show you should have heard before Christmas. I apologise for the delay, and I hope you enjoy Jim's Bag of Baubles.
I am a robot. Tech News.
So we've come to the end of 2007, an interesting year for technology which saw the seventh generation of console video gaming get into full swing, with some startling surprises along the way. The main one, of course, being the runaway success of the Nintendo Wii. After playing second and third fiddle for the last two console generations, the Japanese stalwarts have pulled a Kylie Minogue by executing an impressive comeback. Their latest console sold much better than Microsoft's Xbox 360, despite the latter having a full year's head start in the competition. The other big shock was the Sony PlayStation 3's dismal performance for the first 7 or 8 months of its fragile little life.
Despite being the latest iteration of a brand which had completely dominated the console market for over a decade, the PS3's sales figures left a lot to be desired by Sony's gaming division, who've spent much of the last year hemorrhaging money from every orifice. This is no bad thing, not that I have anything against the machine or its steadily improving game library, but Sony really did need to be knocked down a peg or two for the good of the industry. I mean, seriously, they really thought they could make the console as expensive as they liked and still bring in the punters. That kind of complacency is dangerous, so it's good that they've had it slapped out of them.
2007 was also the year of the iPhone, the conceptual super gadget that Mac fans had waited almost a decade for. It had some big expectations to live up to, with buffs and boffins alike predicting a brilliantly styled technological marvel, a perfect blend of media player, cell phone and portable web browser. The end result was so close, but yet so far.
Unfortunately, its small memory capacity makes it a pretty mediocre MP3 player. Its lackluster specifications make it inferior to other smartphones in the same price range. And despite having a gorgeous high-resolution screen with an intuitive touch interface, its initial lack of 3G and small size make it unimpressive as a web browsing tool.
This is all before we get to the fact that in every country it was launched in, it came attached to a ridiculously priced restrictive contract. Basically, it's a typical piece of Apple-branded hardware. It's hideously overpriced, it doesn't really do anything unique, but the user interface is sort of nice. And, That's it.
James Bag of Bollocks presents the top 5 electronic desirables for Christmas 2007. Thank you.
Number 5,
the PlayStation 3. Okay, it did have a disastrous first year, and the game library isn't exactly spectacular, and it's a bit expensive. But consider this, 2008 will be the PS3's coming-of-age year, with the release of many must-play exclusives like Wipeout HD, 8 Days, Little Big Planet, Metal Gear Online, Haze, and a shedload more. Not to mention Home, which is sort of like Sony's version of Second Life, but not as shit looking.
Number 4. JVC GRPD1 High Definition Camcorder. Budding filmmakers of The Student Loan to Burn, take heed. This camcorder will skin you the best part of $3,000, but it's well worth giving up a year's beer money for, as it records gorgeous progressive scan video in high resolution. Although it's not quite full HD standard, it's still a couple of billion orders of magnitude better than that old mini DVD piece of shit you've been borrowing from your pals.
Number 3. The Asus EPC. This cute, tiny laptop was built by Asus in response to the much-publicised $100 laptop for developing countries. It's not in direct competition with that scheme, though. It's available to purchase in Western countries, and it's damn cheap. Costing about £200, it's a relatively low-spec device sporting a 900MHz Celeron M processor, half a gig of RAM, and a small flash hard drive, the biggest model being about 8GB. You can purchase the laptop loaded with its own unique Linux distribution, which, in a similar vein to Ubuntu, comes with a host of Office, multimedia, and web applications pre-installed. Alternatively, it's perfectly capable of running Windows XP and can be bought that way instead, although that's obviously a more expensive option. If you're in the market for a cheap, no-nonsense workhorse laptop and you're not bothered about playing Morrowind on the bus, then it's quite possibly the best £200 you'll ever part with.
Number 2. A big fuck-off graphics card. If someone you love enough to spend a few hundred quid on this year also happens to be a PC enthusiast, you could do a lot worse than getting them one of the new mid-range graphics cards. ATI recently released their sub-200-quid Radeon 3870, an incredibly powerful yet mind-bogglingly cheap DirectX 10 graphics card. Gaming rigs are going to have to push a lot of polygons next year, what with high-profile, visually stunning titles like Assassin's Creed, Fallout 3, and Far Cry 2 hitting the platform, not to mention the already released system-raping shooter Crysis. Many gamers are now looking for a low-cost interim performance boost, and this card fits that niche rather nicely. Or, if you really love this person, you could blow 500 quid on an Nvidia 8800 Ultra, which is pretty much the most powerful graphics card on the market right now, and will ensure you can run 2008's biggest releases with at least decent frame rates. Although it won't stop you being shit at every game that isn't Sonic the Hedgehog, Richard.
Number 1. Nintendo Wii. Well, good luck finding one. Nintendo's motion-sensing slice of video gaming brilliance is so in demand that people are paying thousands of pounds for them on eBay, which is retarded, but there you go. Despite having a library full of mediocre minigame collections, it has a good slew of premium must-play titles under its belt, like Zelda Twilight Princess, Metroid Prime 3, and of course, Mario Galaxy, the greatest platformer ever made. 2008 will see far more AAA titles hitting the system as more game developers wake up to its unfathomable popularity and throw it something more substantial than shitty PS2 ports. Games to look out for next year include Disaster Day of Crisis, No More Heroes, Super Smash Bros. Brawl, Battalion Wars 2, and a shitload of others.
Tellywank.
Well, there was going to be a review of BBC's new adaptation of Oliver Twist, but what the fuck can you say about it? I've read the original, seen about 12 different versions, and I played Bill Sykes in a high school play. That's I as in Jim, not as in me, Richie. Although the same is probably true for both of us, apart from the last point. Yeah.
It's a faithful, by-the-numbers version of the story that's reasonably well cast and competently made. A lot like the BBC's other version from 1985. I honestly can't figure out why we need yet another adaptation, even one as good as this. Perhaps the BBC wanted a widescreen version in the archive.
Christmas Telly Highlights.
The best thing about this time of year, besides an excuse to overeat and an increase in material possessions, is Doctor Who's now traditional Christmas special. It's been the yearly highlight since 2005, and this year's episode titled Voyage of the Damned will finally bring together two of humankind's most attractive specimens, Kylie Minogue and David Tennant. Frankly, that alone is enough to get me excited, and I feel they're doing our species a great disservice by not having unprotected sex, but I digress. Plot details are thin on the ground, but it does involve the Titanic somehow getting itself into orbit, leaving me to wonder if Russell T. Davis is capable of writing a Christmas episode that doesn't involve a giant space-bound vessel of some description.
I'm hoping next year's will feature a giant space-bound penis.
Russell T. Davis is a giant space-bound penis. We've all seen Voyage of the Damned now, and I'm miserable to report that I thought it was a big steaming pile of turd, with far more than its fair share of cringeworthy moments, unnecessary deaths, and plot holes big enough for Kylie to drive a forklift truck through. Let's hope Series 4 is of better quality than this.
On Boxing Day, ITV are showing their adaptation of The Old Curiosity Shop, presumably in a bid to bring the works of Charles Dickens into disfavour this Christmas by making everyone fucking sick of them. It's top draw source material and Derek Jacobi's in it, so there's no excuse for it being crap.
Turns out I missed it anyway, I was too busy playing Zelda. Jim's Bag of Bollocks presents the top 5 television events of 2007. Thank you.
Number 5. The Lost Season 3 finale. It took nearly 2 whole seasons to return to form, but Lost really pulled the finger out for its 2007 finale, which was packed with Hitchcock tension, Michael Bay action, and David Lynch what the fuckery. Also, Charlie died.
Number 4. Jekyll. Stephen Moffat has written all of the best episodes of Doctor Who, and it's not difficult to see why. His macabre yet joyous writing style is perfectly suited to mapping the adventures of the quirky Time Lord, and his work on the series harks back to classic Tom Baker stories like The Talons of Wen Xiang. And that seems to be it. No other examples.
Fuck off, you cheeky bastard.
It's no wonder then that he did a fantastic job of penning the BBC's high-budget update slash sequel to Robert Louis Stevenson's classic novel, Jekyll and Hyde. It's possibly one of the best British dramas ever produced, which is also due in no small part to the excellent performance by James Nesbitt in the title role and his alter ego. Number 3.
Top Gear Africa Special. The revamped Top Gear has been a must-see show for all manly men since its launch in 2002. It's so easy to dismiss the series as just a blokey show about cars and shit, but it's so much more than that. It's always funny, it's always gripping, and sometimes it's even a white-knuckle thrill ride. Who can forget Richard Hammond racing a Bugatti Veyron against an F-15 fighter jet? The best episode this year set Clarkson, Hammond and May the challenge of driving 1,000 miles across salt plains and marshland in Botswana in second-hand, 2-wheel drive vehicles that were never designed to leave tarmac. It was breathtaking.
Number 2, Battlestar Galactica Season 3 Exodus Parts 1 and 2. Admittedly, Battlestar Season 3 did get a bit rubbish, but not before airing the best fucking piece of television ever. Oh my god, I came! My arse was on the very molecular edge of my seat, my knuckles were whiter than a clan rally, my balls were nailed to the wall, then all came down to that one moment. The pinnacle scene that science fiction television will never better. The Battlestar Galactica hurtles towards the surface of New Caprica at 1,000 miles an hour, launches Vipers into the atmosphere and jumps right back out again, not 3 feet away from hitting the ground. I pooed my pants with glee. There's a hole in my shorts from the force of the erection that I had. What could possibly top that? This.
It was the final piece of a 3-tier puzzle. New Doctor Who had systematically resurrected and revamped its 2 biggest villains, and even had them warring against each other in their spectacular Series 2 finale. But there was still something left to do. Data had Law. Danger Mouse had Baron Greenback. Sherlock Holmes had Moriarty. And Doctor Who has his master.
I am the master.
Fresh from the set of Life on Mars, and why that's not in this list, I've no idea, John Sim makes a devilishly decadent master his own. And this latest incarnation of the character was arguably the most sadistic portrayal in the show's history. He severely mutilates an entire generation of humans, enslaves another, beats his wife, and turns David Tennant into a CGI scrotum.
What a bastard!
Game Zones. Crysis is developer Crytek's spiritual sequel to acclaimed 2004 shooter Far Cry. That's a lot of tears.
Like Far Cry, it's one of the most high-profile PC releases of its time, largely due to the hype surrounding its incredible graphics engine. Like Far Cry, it takes place on a beachy island in the Pacific that's covered in jungle. It's a sandbox style of game of tactical first-person combat that gets a bit repetitive until about three-quarters of the way through when the plot throws a giant sci-fi curveball that makes you wonder if you're playing... Oh, Jesus... Put a comma at some point, will you?
Yeah, again, fuck you, alright?
It's a sandbox style of game of tactical first-person combat that gets a bit repetitive until about three-quarters of the way through when the plot throws a giant sci-fi curveball that makes you wonder if you're playing the same game now that you were 12 hours ago. Just like Far Cry. I think you can see where I'm going with this. Aside from a completely different plot, which throws some new bells and whistles in the form of a high-tech nanosuit, which does, to its credit, add a new dimension to the gameplay, Crysis is basically Far Cry with better graphics, and to be honest, the last thing Far Cry needed was better graphics.
I could talk for hours about how impressive and gorgeous the visuals are, and wouldn't be lying, it's really beautiful, and it is without question the most photorealistic game ever made. I'm not saying that out of excitement, it's not hyperbole, it's not even an exaggeration, it's just the simple, honest truth. You have never seen a game that looks as real as this. Unfortunately, realism like this comes at a high price, and the currency is clock cycles. There isn't a PC in the world today that can run Crysis smoothly at its maximum settings, although the most bleeding-edge hardware money can buy will get you sort of close. My gaming PC was pretty high-end 2 years ago, but it's getting on a bit now, and to be honest, I thought getting it running smoothly would be harder than taking part in a futuristic Japanese game show.
From Mega of Takeshi Castle.
Trolls will die! No trolls! Life or best friend! Asepath!
Oh my god, can I get a minute here, man?
No trolls now! Choose Who Die, sponsored by Asian Stereotype Compilation.
Sure, it's not as artistic and imaginative as something like Okami on the PS2 or Mario Galaxy, but it's not that kind of game for fuck's sake. It's a shooty-shooty duck-and-cover thrill ride with parallax mapping and specular highlights and HDR lighting and high-resolution textures and all that sort of shit. It's the Die Hard of video games. You don't rent Die Hard if you want Memento. If you want Memento, you rent Memento. If you want Die Hard, you rent Die Hard. It's not fucking difficult.
Except those types of arguments never work. The fact that Crysis isn't trying to be a clever game doesn't excuse it from being a bit, shall we say, samey. If you'll allow us to make another Far Cry comparison, another thing it shares with its older brother is the overwhelming sense that you're playing a tech demo. While they've spent a bit more time on the story this time round, it still feels like the plot is little more than a device to lead you onto different types of areas to show off the versatility of the graphics engine. That's perhaps a cynical attitude, but it's not without justification.
There's nothing particularly bad about the game, it's just that it never challenges you with something you haven't done before. It's like a compendium of obligatory first-person shooter moments. Stealth combat? Check. Low gravity level? Check. Awkwardly controlled vehicles? Check. Pistol rifle, shotgun, machine gun, rocket launcher? Check. Special suit that gives you superhuman abilities and unrealistically balances the combat mechanics in your favour? Check. It's all here and it's all the same.
The difference here is that it's all tweaked and executed to perfection. And that is the epiphany I had about 3 hours into the game. It's easy to just dismiss it as a generic PC shooter that happens to be a graphics whore, but I put it to you that this is the ultimate game of its class. The pinnacle of first-person shooter evolution. If Wolfenstein 3D was a fish that crawled onto land, Crysis is the upright ape that built the space shuttle. And if you don't think that's the best metaphor you've ever heard in a podcast, I'm giving up.
In short, if you like impressive graphics and... No, wait, if you like impressive graphics and first-person shooters, then... Wait a second. If you like impressive graphics and first-person shooters and you have the hardware to run the game on decent settings and you haven't played Far Cry before, Crysis will blow your mind and you need to buy it.
Jim's Bag of Bollocks presents the top 5 gaming titles of 2007. Thank you.
System Shock Lite, or Bioshock as it's known to console tards, was praised for its supposedly brilliant storyline with its bullshit intellectual overtones by people who seem to think that not being as utterly devoid of originality as Halo automatically makes it a fucking masterpiece. It's in this list partly because it isn't shit, but mostly because it's one of those rare, massively hyped games that actually lives up to a fraction of its marketing promises. Cough. Assassin's Creed. Cough. Mass Effect. Cough. Everything on the PS3.
Shivering Isles. Oblivion's first and, as it transpired, last proper expansion took a game that didn't quite live up to its expectations and booted its arse into surpassing them. It ticked all the boxes that vanilla Oblivion sadly forgot to, like branching quest paths and imaginative art direction, quest lines in the original game have very little in the way of variation. Individual missions can be tackled in a number of ways, but the narrative never changes. In Shivering Isles, however, you get to make many key decisions that dramatically affect the main storyline. It was also nice to see a change from the overly familiar Tolkienian stylings of the main game, although all they really did was fill the landscape with giant mushrooms from Morrowind. The shits.
Number 3.
The Witcher. The Witcher is a Polish RPG made in Poland by Polish people, set in a universe created by a Polish author whose books are virtually unknown outside of Poland because most people outside Poland can't speak Polish. It's a very polished title with more depth and atmosphere than you can shake a pole at. Well, ish. Unfortunately, it's one of those titles that never sold particularly well, despite living up to its pledge of being an immense role-playing experience. It's as good at being an RPG as Mr. Sheen is at cleaning coffee tables. And it's Polish.
Number 2.
Super Mario Galaxy. It's arguably not difficult to be the best Wii game, but Mario Galaxy is simultaneously the best platformer ever made on any platform. Ever. Basically, Nintendo can stop now because they'll never better this title ever. The combination of traditional jump-and-run gameplay with perfectly executed gravity mechanics makes Mario Galaxy one of those rare titles that's actually worth buying an entire console for.
Portal. This first-person puzzler could be so easily overlooked, as it's the smallest and shortest title in the orange box. It's only about 5 hours long, but its groundbreaking game mechanics, ominous atmosphere, and uncharacteristic sense of humour make it the most enjoyable 5 hours of gaming you're likely to have this year. The difficulty level is absolutely perfect. Even the most taxing puzzles are a joy to solve, and the game simply doesn't ever get frustrating or annoying.
Jim's Fortnite of Fun. Sponsored by
Fortnite of Fun. Fortnite of Fun. I'll tell you about my Fortnite of fucking fun. I've been bedbound, freezing my cock off, couldn't eat anything for a week, can't hear anything out of one ear, and I couldn't speak loud enough to complain about it. Not that anyone would have listened. So I'll tell you what, unless you want me to review the co-op's own brand equivalent of Lemsip, I'll hand over to the prick this week, shall I?
The Mighty Master Jim has asked me to do my top 5 films of 2007. And first of all, I told him to get fucked. And then I thought, well, why not?
Number 5.
We have Transformers. This made the grade purely for being every 80s child's wet dream. It was fan-wank-tastic and a lot more entertaining than the Simpsons extended episode. Movie. I know it was a Michael Bay film, but still rocked. And if there is one thing Bay can do, as good as anyone, or better than anyone else, in fact, is action.
Number 4.
Next up at number 4 is Hot Fuzz. Ever since I heard that the spaced crew were making their follow-up to Shaun of the Dead, I, along with my friends, were salivating to the point where we had a nice swimming pool full of spit. Then I heard it was going to be an action comedy set in a rural town where Simon Pegg and Nick Frost were going to play police officers. We were sold. Were we disappointed? Fuck no, this film was off the fucking chain. Laughs, violence and over-the-top gunfights. I can't wait to see what they do next.
Number 3.
At 3, we have Grindhouse. And right now I can hear all of you and pretty much just kind of fuck off. Unfortunately, being a Scot, I didn't see the film as it was originally intended. I couldn't care less though. The whole thing was worth the watch alone. Quentin Tarantino's section, Death Proof, although overrated because it's a Quentin Tarantino film, was incredibly enjoyable. Planet Terror was a whole lot better. The tongue-in-cheek humour made me smile. The action sequences, although silly, mini bike for example, you'll know what I mean if you watch it, the whole humour, the gore, the violence, the missing reel, it showed that Rodriguez totally embraced the grindhouse aspect of the film.
Number 2.
We have Sunshine. Danny, Trainspotting Boyle, makes his foray into science fiction and blows my mind. As well as being a sci-fi flick, it is also a very effective character drama, showing that the human aspect of such an operation. These people literally have the fate of the whole planet in their hands. And when the shit eventually starts to happen, it's due to human error. The visuals are just spectacular. The characters are well portrayed with standout performances. A few years ago, the film person that I am, or I was rather, wouldn't have touched this film with a 10-foot barge pole. That just goes to show how much of a spacker I used to be, and, you know, in some respects still am. This year, my number one spot goes to The Assassination of Jesse James by the Coward Robert Ford. Of course, a very long title, but that really matters none when the film was close to fucking perfection. In fact, scratch that, it was perfect. The film I'm definitely looking most forward to in 2008 happens to be The Dark Knight. Well, duh. Batman Begins was just a tour de force and it totally covered the previous films in a vast amount of urine. Tim Burton right now is still washing the piss out of his hair. Chris Nolan, who in this prick's humble opinion has yet to make a shit film, returns with his follow-up to his Bat revamp. Christian Bale, Michael Caine and Morgan Freeman all return. Replaced as Katie Holmes, thank fuck, because nobody really likes her, as Rachel Dawes by the strangely attractive Maggie Gyllenhaal. She's very welcome, in my opinion, to take over, and she actually looks the part. Standout thing about this next film is going to be the Joker. So that's it from the prick, wishing you a pish Xmas and a shitty new year. I hope that you'll finally hear my mini-segment when Jim gets off his fat, flubby arse and decides that, you know, it might be a good idea to get it sorted. But until Sir Tubbs a Lot figures that one out, basically this has been the prick. And remember that I hate each and every one of you with equal passion, apart from Richard Morgan, who I hate on a whole nother level. He's a bigger prick than everybody combined. He's a bigger prick than me, and I'm called a prick. Everybody hate Richard Morgan. Thank you very much. Merry Christmas.
Well, that's enough for this edition. Jim will be back in January with post-Christmas Light Wallet Blues special, where he'll be reviewing legitimately free games, web-based TV shows, and other sorts of shit that you can do to keep yourself amused without spending a penny.
If you disagree with any of the top fives, wish to praise the lack of Jim's stupid Ewan McGregor voice, or even if you want to let us know who's got the sexiest vocal tones, email us on feedback@bagofbollocks.co.uk or visit the website and leave a comment. That's www.bagofbollocks.co.uk.
So, yeah. Fuck you.
And I promise things will be back to normal next month. I'd like to say a big thank you to the guys for helping me out. I'm off back to bed for a Co-op on brand Lem Sips, so here's something decidedly un-Christmassy to play us out.
To get you well soon, I offer advice. One friend to another, I ask you no price. Better than medicine, lotion or pill, go now and find something salty to swill. The reasons to try it? 1. It won't kill you. 2. It's effective. And 3. It's familiar.
Time for Jimmy Bye Bye.